It might be in Gordon Hayward's best interest to opt out of his contract, and it's because of a thing called escrow. We're going to talk about it right now with Ryan Bernadoni on this Monday Locked On Celtics. Millie, let's go. Rainer J's back with the vengeance back. All the real Celtics fans in attendance. This the truth like 34. This like walking in the garden when you hear the roars. The crowd goes crazy. Most in-depth coverage on the daily. Mainly podcast royalty, the content kings. When you talking about the franchise with 17 rings. Focus like Danny at the deadline. Global with it, got a local feel like the red line, the blue line, the green line. Play it in between time. I'ma throw my C's jersey on in the meantime and press play. When the F's done, I can't wait until the next day. Trying to stay in tune with the C's, that's the best way. Melly. Hey there, John Corrales here from MassLive.com. I'm their Boston Celtics beat reporter. Thank you for downloading this show once again if you're a regular listener, or for the first time if you're a new listener. Everybody's welcome. I love you all. Really enjoy the fact that you're making this show part of your daily routine. If you're new, this show is part of your daily routine if you want to listen to it Monday through Friday, because I'm dropping daily Monday through Friday podcasts. That's what we do here on the Locked On Podcast Network. So today, this show is about, it's part one of a conversation I had with Ryan Bernadoni, who has run Celtics Hub and now has his own kind of thing. He's at Danger Cart on Twitter, or at Dan Jerkart, depending on how you want to read the name. Anthropomorphic Cat on Twitter. But he has a great grasp of the collective bargaining agreement. I mean, he is one of the smartest Celtics fans that you're going to see out there, and I call him a fan because he doesn't do this professionally, though he could. When it comes to the collective bargaining agreement and some of the nuance, Ryan is the guy. He really, I think, understands how to structure things, how to structure contracts. I appreciate his views on team building, because he takes things into account that, frankly, I don't always. And it's good to follow him and have these reminders from him from time to time. So we talked for a while. I'm splitting the conversation into two parts. Part one today is a lot of the nitty-gritty, the nuance. And I said it at the top in the cold open, escrow. It sounds boring, right? Sounds like something, I think that's part of my mortgage, right? But, he really lays out this plan and why the numbers that you see, that $34 million that we're talking about with him, it's not really $34 million. It's his percentage. It's a larger percentage of what players are making, but the numbers that you see on the contracts, they're not real. And Ryan explains all of that. In this part, the part one, we get into why the numbers aren't real, why the escrow thing is important, and why it might be in Gordon Hayward's best interests to opt out this year if he and the Celtics can agree on a better long-term number. And it's not because he wants to help the Celtics. It's not because it helps the Celtics get under the cap or the tax or whatever. It is from the perspective of the player and how he can maximize his money. And so opting out of what looks like $34 million, it's not really $34 million. He's not going to get $34 million next year. So let's just get into this conversation so Ryan Bernadoni can explain to you what I'm talking about. All right, Ryan, thanks for hopping on the podcast. I've got a lot to get to with you, because not only do you have maybe the most comprehensive knowledge of the collective bargaining agreement, in my opinion, at least when it comes to salary cap matters, or especially when it comes to salary cap matters, but I really like your approach to the off season. You have what I'll say might be the most realistic approach. You come at it like maybe the closest thing to an actual team builder versus the rest of us who are more guessing to varying degrees. So let's start with this. I want to start with the salary cap stuff. And one thing that stood out to me when I was reading through your off-season preview, the escrow and why, I know we're opening up a podcast on a thing called escrow, which is exciting. I know people are excited. But for people who don't know, when players are paid, they're paid, you know, their share of the their salary, whatever, they get their check and the deductions and whatever goes to wherever. But there's also a number that's being held by the league to ensure that the split between the league and the players is indeed essentially that 50-50 split. So there's basically a pile of money somewhere that either at the end of the season when the accounting's done, if the owners got too much, the players get some or all of that escrow that was held, and vice versa. If the players got too much, then that escrow goes to the owners. So why does that play a role in how these salary cap figures and the tax figures get calculated?
Sure. First off, thanks for having me on, and I'll try not to get too into the weeds and too sort of off into tangents here on some of the math stuff. So rein me back in if necessary.
Not a problem.
I'll try to cover
that. You do your talking, and if I feel the need to translate it to English, I'll do my best.
Please, or just tell me to stop talking. So the salary cap is really just sort of a construct, right? So the way that the league works is that they have come to an agreement with the Players Association that they take all of what they call basketball-related income, and you add up all the money that comes from the TV deal, the national TV deal makes up about half of it. And then you take everything else, which is fans in the seats, which is what's going to get important here, but it's also local TV deals, it's naming rights, it's selling jerseys, it's all the money that sort of you can tie back to basketball. There are some things that are not basketball related income. If the TD Garden is used for a concert, that's not basketball related income. And that's maybe a bad example because the TD Garden isn't owned by the Celtics, but you get what I'm saying.
Right.
Basketball related.
Sure.
And the agreement they have is that the players make between 49 and 51% of all basketball income for the year. And it depends, that 49 to 51 depends on how much the league actually makes. If the league makes less, the players get a little bit less. If they make more, they get a little bit more. It's sort of a revenue sharing idea on top of the fact that it's all revenue sharing. And the salary cap itself is, like I said, it's a construct. It's a number that is set based on the league and the Players Association coming together to say, basically, where do we need to set the salary cap so that our projections will land as close to as possible to that 50% number? Now, we may go a little bit over, a little bit under, we may have to adjust things, but we're trying to get as close as we can to that 50% number. And they're actually quite good at it. They set the cap and teams go out and spend, and sometimes they spend a little too much and sometimes they spend too little. Part of the reason we had the big cap spike a couple of years ago and it was as big as it was is because the league didn't think that teams were going to be as stupid as they were in spending up to the first cap spike. Like, they basically set the salary cap thinking like, yeah, we're going to do this, but teams aren't going to give, like, nobody's going to give Timofey Mozgov a gigantic contract as soon as the offseason opens, right? And then teams do, and they sort of spent like crazy, and it screwed up the numbers for a couple of years and things like that. But they're generally, under normal circumstances, good at it, and teams sort of hit the number that you're looking for. But the protection for that is exactly what you said. It's a system called escrow. And in a normal circumstances, they take 10% of every player's check and they put it into, like you said, somewhere. I'm assuming a bank. Maybe it's a jar. I really don't actually know.
I'd like to think it's under Adam Silver's mattress. And then he just doles
California
it out.
California King, right? It fits all under there somehow.
Yeah. But at Summer League, he just pulls out a wad of cash. Like, okay, here's yours and here's yours.
Yeah, totally. This is little handed out and, little bonus here and there.
Yeah.
But they take that 10% out of everybody's check. And the owners are billionaires, so I actually don't think they withhold in the same manner. But the owners have to set aside money for this as well because it's escrow, right? You're matching funds. And then at the end of the year, exactly like you said, they look and they say, okay, the players made $3.8 billion and they were due $3.81 billion. And so that $10 million, right? Like, they go into the owner's escrow and they have to pay everybody out a little bit more. Or if they you know, overshoot it, the players don't get back everything they put into the escrow. They put 10% in. They're hoping that at the end of the year they get 10% or maybe even a little bit more out. And maybe they get 8% out, right? The rest of it goes back to the owners. And so the way you can think about it is that players don't actually get paid the amount of money that you see on websites, right? I have a roster tool.
Yeah.
It has a number. It says this player is going to make $5 million. They don't actually get $5 million necessarily. What they get is $5 million divided by all of the salaries paid in the season, gives you a percentage, right? That's 0.07% of total salaries times half of revenue. And that's what you get. And so the escrow is worked in to make that function correctly. And what's important in the coming season is that because all of these numbers are made up, and the only number that really matters is that the players are going to get, because they're going to underrun, 49% of revenue. Everything else you can play with as long as you get them to their total amount that they're owed. And so what you can do is something that you talked about a couple days ago with Keith Smith, is they can set the salary cap however they want, as long as you balance everything out to make it so you hit that number. So if you want to set the salary cap at $200 million, you can. The players will sign contracts that well overrun how much they're actually supposed to get at the end of the year. You could set a really high escrow amount, withhold a whole bunch of money, and then give it all back to the owners at the end of the year and just have it sit in a bank somewhere doing nothing for no reason. Like it wouldn't make any sense to do that. But the cap itself is not like some thing that has sprung out of nature. It's a negotiated thing that they make up in order to pay the proper amount.
So
that's what escrow is. It's the balancing feature in that.
So the player signs a guaranteed contract for a number that we all see, but really that number is used to calculate a percentage of the overall earnings. Back with more with Ryan in just a moment. First, I want to have what's probably an awkward conversation with you about erectile dysfunction, but a necessary conversation because we know that a healthy life includes a healthy sex life. But if you struggle with erectile dysfunction, you might not feel like your best self. If you want help with ED, Roman connects you with real U.S. licensed healthcare professionals who can prescribe the medicine that you need. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation for ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. A healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, Roman will ship you real medicine with free 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward, simple, and importantly, it is discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn and complete an online visit. Erectile dysfunction used to be tough to talk about, but now there's Roman. Complete an online visit today to connect with a doctor and take care of it. Just go to GetRoman.com/LockedOn to get up to $50 off your first month of ED treatment, a free online visit, and free 2-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOn for up to $50 off your first month of ED treatment. GetRoman.com/LockedOn. Have you subscribed to the Locked On Celtics podcast yet? You can wherever podcasts exist, and you can follow us on Spotify.
Yeah, it's a percentage of the overall payments to all players,
right?
So if there's 500 players who appear with 2-ways and guys coming in and out on 10 days and all that, right? You add all that up, everything paid to the players in the year. You take Daniel Tice's $5 million, you divide that by everything that's paid to everybody. It gives you a percentage. You multiply that. I'm simplifying things a little bit here, but not all that much. You multiply it by the total amount that the players are going to get, 49%, 50%, or 51%, functionally, depending on how much revenue the league actually made for the year. And what you do is you take, they made 90% of every check through the year. They put 10% aside. And that 10% is enough where, under normal circumstances, you can adjust it up or down and give them the right amount of money for the year. Right. So this year, when COVID hit and they said, oh, we're not going to have any fans in the stands and we're shutting down, what they did was they increased the escrow. They said, as of a certain date, you're going to have a couple of checks left. We're going to jack the escrow up to 25% and just assume you're never going to get it back. Right. Normally, you put 10% in and you figure you're going to get about 10% out at the end of the year. You're going to get just about the whole thing because we're pretty good at this. Just assume we're taking 10% of these last couple of checks and just assume it's gone. We're not going to make enough money. Just throw it away. And that's sort of what we're talking about for next year, is they'll set the salary cap in some way that makes it so that teams can continue to operate in a logical manner leading into post-COVID world. And we'll just take this money away and assume you're never going to see it. If you do, great. If fans can come back into the stands after the 20th game, we'll make more than we thought, and you'll get as much of it back as we are contractually obligated to give back. But that's really what you're doing, is you're just trying to find a way to not have the salary cap be $80 million and everything blow up. The luxury tax is a different conversation, which we can also and should have, because it's maybe more relevant to the Celtics and more relevant to sort of how things are going to get set up for next year. But that's the interplay between the cap and escrow that they're trying to work out now.
So that escrow, I'm reading through your offseason preview part one, and the
2,000 words.
Yeah. And I understood probably like 60% of those words. I think I had you on the podcast so you can explain my questions to me more so than to the listeners. But the escrow, the way they decide to figure this out, how does that impact like the Celtics business, specifically with Gordon Hayward? Because that's the big linchpin to everything that happens this offseason. Gordon Hayward opting in versus opting out and signing long term. And I know you have thoughts on that too. But how much does this escrow and how much they take out and how they structure this upcoming collective bargaining agreement, like how does that play into what Gordon Hayward is doing?
Yeah, so that's a good question, and he's a good player to frame this with. So imagine a circumstance where what the league says is, we're going to set the salary cap at $110 million. I believe that they should set the salary cap at $110 million instead of $109.14 million, because 110 is a round number. And if you're going to make up a number anyway, make up a round number to use. So let's say they set it at $110 million. And if you did the math, and again, I think Keith mentioned this a couple days ago, the number would be like 85 million, right? It would be a number that is not workable for the teams. The luxury tax would be a complete disaster.
Right.
The players who are free agents this year would be getting completely screwed. It would just be unfair all around. So they're going to set it, say, at $110 million. And then instead of that normal 10% escrow, again, where normally you would expect to get maybe all of it or very nearly all of it, maybe even a little bit more back at the end of the year, they say $110 million salary cap, 30% escrow. Everybody just assume you're going to lose 30% of your pay, and it's going to go back to the owners, and that's how we split the revenue up. And so if you're Gordon Hayward, and you have what you're thinking is, I'm going to make a big amount this year, and then, you know, I'm in my 30s, and maybe I'm going to get a contract next year where it's not going to be another max. Maybe it'll be $15 million a year. Maybe it'll be 25 if I'm an 18-6-6 player. But like, I'm probably not going to get a max, and
sure,
and I have to sort of bet on myself. Or I can think, well, I could bypass this year. I could opt out and re-sign for a longer term at lower dollars. The possible advantage in that is, if you're going to lose 30% of your salary in 1 year, it's better to lose 30% of $20 million than 30% of $34 million, right? If it's a one-year problem. Now, it might be a two-year problem. It might be a three-year problem. We don't really know. But if you're assuming that fans will be back in the arenas and that things will be basically back to normal in 2021-22, then you should be expecting that the escrow this year will be much higher. So there is some balancing mechanism for someone like Hayward in saying, like, you know, normally you wouldn't want to take a cut from $34 million to $20 million, but if I'm pushing money into future years that I wouldn't expect, like, I might actually get some of that back because this is a bad year to make the most money you'll ever make in your career. You're going to lose 30% of it. If you're making $34 million, that's like, you know, $11 million. That's a lot of money to just disappear. So that's sort of how it works with his decision in particular.
Okay. So really, in all honesty, when you factor in things like taxes, things like your agent fees, things like jock taxes in other cities, which, for people who don't know, athletes get hit with taxes when they go play in other cities. They call them jock taxes, like a one-time, you know, for...
By the days you work in each state.
Yeah.
Basically, right? You go to California, you play the Warriors and the Lakers and the Clippers and the Kings, and that's 8 days that you played working in California. You pay California taxes for 8 days, right?
Right. So players get dinged for that stuff. Then on top of that, on top of, you know, being in the highest tax bracket and losing all of that, you lose another 30%. I mean, it almost makes more sense to opt out of that money than to keep it. the way you're saying.
Yeah, so I mean, it depends, right? If you think, if you're a professional athlete and you've been one of the best in the world at what you do for basically your entire life as you remember it, he might just be thinking, I'm going to have a year where I make $30 million again next year. It's completely reasonable. He signed a max contract once before. Maybe he really just looks at it and is like, you know, I could have been an all-star this year. Maybe I'm going to go and get my own next year a little bit more. And I think I can sign for 4 years and $120 million next offseason. You and I might think that that's incorrect, but it's possible. Like, we don't really, right? Sure. We don't know. We don't know how good of a season he's going to be. Sure. He's going to have. And from his standpoint, he might just be thinking, I'm Gordon Hayward. I'm going to go and get that contract. And so if that's the mindset, then there's really nothing you can do about it, right? From the team's perspective as a fan, you just have to sort of go like, all right, I mean, it's your decision. You can do whatever you want. But there is sort of a, if you get somebody sitting down and lay out the whole situation of where you know, if they think this is where their career is, something different, then there, you know, there's a reasonable argument that like, this is not the year to make 34. It's always the year to make $34.5 million, $34.2 million. By all means, I will take $34.2 million. They can take 30% away. Great. I'll take, you know.
Yeah, right. Sure.
In the grand scheme of things, wonderful. But as the sort of funny money we're talking about here, it's not the best year to be making the most money you'll ever make in your career. So maybe you push some money around and it's not going to make up the whole difference probably. But if you want to stay in Boston, if you know, like it here, you don't want to risk getting traded to the Magic or the Kings or whatever, then it's not, there are also financial considerations related to COVID that come into play.
Yeah. See, that's an interesting thing. That's an aspect of Gordon Hayward's contract that I never would have even considered, but it does make sense. It does make sense. So specifically with Gordon Hayward now is another thing that I've seen you talk about. I've been kicking around different ideas, you know, opting out, signing long-term, how long is long-term? And I want to fold in the second part of your off-season preview in this part of the discussion. If the Celtics were to keep him and sign him long-term, like what's the ideal long-term scenario to you? Because I know that you're advocating for a very Jason Tatum-centric approach to the future of this team's building, which we all can say, like, yeah, obviously you build around Tatum, quote-unquote, build around Tatum, but when you talk about building around Tatum, you're talking about structuring contracts, and I think the most NBA fans aren't looking at length of contract in terms of building around the team's stars, especially a star like Tatum, who's young and is only about to go into his, only about to sign his, yeah, his rookie extension. He still has one more year on his rookie contract. So what do you think if the Celtics were to keep Hayward long term? What's the best structure for that? Back to wrap up part one of my extensive discussion with Ryan in just a moment. Now, I love Built Bars. You know I love Built Bars. I can't stop talking about Built Bars because they are helping me get back into shape. I take a Built Bar with me to the gym every time I go. And after I'm done, I pop one of those suckers and it is delicious. It tastes like a candy bar. It's really great. It comes in great flavors. My personal favorite is peanut butter, but it comes in a ton of flavors. Even if you have a nut allergy, you can get one, no problem. Covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew. Now, you can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a Built Bar. They're low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. If you're on a keto diet, that's great. Peanut butter, my favorite, gives me the 19 grams of protein that I want right after a lift, so I can feed my muscles. 180 calories is gonna make sure that I'm not blowing out what I'm doing cardio-wise, and just 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. So go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON. Even if you've used it before, you can use it again, and now you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. Be sure to follow our social channels at LO Celtics on Twitter and at Locked On Celtics on Instagram.
So best is a matter of opinion, right? It's a matter of how you think he's going to age and a lot of different things. What I have put forward is that, and I understand that this is ridiculous and that it's in some ways like not what any fan wants to talk about and think about, because it, especially like, if you grew up in the 80s, you never had to think about this, right? You never had to plan for what your superstar young player was going to do in their seventh season,
right?
Right. You just in their third season, you didn't have to plan like this. And if you're a fan, you don't have to plan like this. Now you can watch every game and be happy and let the team deal with it. It's like not a thing that you have to actually do, but I can't help it. and so to me, the ideal sort of structure would be Kemba Walker's contract is going to end in 3 years. He's going to opt into that fourth year very likely. Unless, again, you're having this conversation about would he opt out. And like, we will be having this conversation for him in 2 years, right? We'll be saying, well, if Kemba were to opt out, what could you sign him for if he went to 4 years instead of whatever, right?
Right.
But realistically, he's going to opt into the fourth year because he's a 6 foot tall point guard and he'll be in his 30s.
Yeah, makes sense.
And so if you could get Hayward onto that same timeline, then you do see this sort of cliff where it's like, oh, all these contracts fall off at the same time. And it's 1 year before when Jason Tatum will be offered his second extension, if everything goes well. So the Supermax extension that would come. So this, you know, we're assuming that his extension, as his rookie extension, will say, if you make all NBA next year, you're going to get something over 25%, right? You'll move up towards the 30% tier. Maybe it's just, even if he makes third team, it's 30%. You can kind of mess with some of the numbers in there. But he'll get an extension coming up that will have Rose Rule terminology in it that says, if you make all NBA, you're going to get extra money. And then 3 years into that contract, so 4 years from now, he will be eligible for what people call the Supermax, right? What we're talking about with Giannis this year. So Giannis can be offered a contract up to 35% of the cap, or specifically for 35% of the cap, because he's an MVP, but also because he's, you know, an all NBA. You don't have to reach the MVP level.
Right.
And so Tatum will hit that level 7 years into his career, 4 years from now. And so if you can have all of your veteran players sort of fall off the books in 3 years, you have this little window where you can go to him and say, basically, what do you want to do with this team now, right? You're 26 years old. You are the franchise. We hope you're an MVP by that point. We hope that you won a title. If you've won a title, some of this stuff doesn't matter because then it's all just kind of paid off already. But, you know, you are this franchise. We don't want your eyes to wander. We know you love Kobe Bryant. We know the Lakers want you. Don't go there. The Chicago Bulls, there's no team in St. Louis, but the Chicago Bulls are Midwest and you can be the face of Jordan Brand. Don't look at them. Don't go to Miami Beach. Don't go to any of these other places. What do you want to do? And you can create a window where it's like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, basically nothing else, maybe a little bit more here and there and a bunch of free agent space. Or you could have traded Gordon Hayward, or you could have traded Kemba Walker, or you could have traded who you trade Gordon Hayward for now, right? You open up this window where it's like, this is the time where you transition from this team that we currently know. Yes, the two J's, but Kemba and Gordon in their 30s, to this is the team that will take Jason Tatum through his prime and get him to sign the Supermax that will keep him in Boston until he's 32 years old instead of 26 years old. And so that's where it's sort of like, if you could get him to opt out and sign for 3 years at a number that might get you under the tax this year, depending on exactly where the tax line is, and wouldn't be too onerous after Tatum's max extension kicks in, there is this sort of sweet spot of like, yeah, 3 years, $65 million, 3 years, $60 million, where it would all make sense to me. If you go longer than that, you really have to believe that Hayward is going to age well, or that you will have the assets necessary to basically salary dump him with pretty heavy money 3 or 4 years down the line, or you end up in the same spot that the Bucks are right now, which is that if you haven't won a title and you have an aging core around a player who's deciding what he wants to do basically for the rest of his prime, are they going to commit to you or say, you know, I appreciate you really pushed, we really came close, but I want to go and team up with my best friend Bradley Beal on the Los Angeles Lakers. And that's kind of a disaster for the franchise.
Right.
So, and again, it sucks to have to think about this. You never had to think about this with Larry Bird, right? He was never going anywhere. The salary cap was different. It just worked differently then. So it's a period of NBA history where you do have to think that way. The player empowerment era sounds good when you're trying to grab somebody else's best player. But when you have that player, it's sometimes, you know, it's not always the way that you want to think about your team.
Yeah. And again, I think it's good for fans to look at this. I mean, obviously, if you choose not to, I fully understand because, you know, appreciate it for as long as it's here. But the fact is that there is an expiration date. And, you know, Keith and I did talk about, like, there's no wire-to-wire full career in on one team anymore. That's just damn near impossible to have happen. You mean even somebody who identifies so much with a team like Dwayne Wade had a dalliance somewhere else. So there's
Tim Duncan almost signed with Orlando. Like it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan almost signed with Orlando. We know the story about he and Doc Rivers and
right.
whatever. Like the player who is most associated in this era as a one team guy almost signed with another team at his prime in the middle of his career. Steph Curry might, you know, he's the one, right? He might be a Warrior for his entire career, but in the big picture, like most players leave. Kobe didn't leave, obviously. Not every player does, but a lot more players jump teams, and a lot more players jump teams multiple times, which is really the different things. It's not, these aren't Michael Jordan leaving to go to the Wizards after winning six titles and being 34 years old, right? Like these are in their prime players making multiple team changes, usually self-decided, right? Like even these aren't players who are being traded away because the team is rebuilding or something. Like these are players saying, I am forcing a trade or I'm leaving in free agency and doing it multiple times in their career, sometimes multiple times in their 20s. And right, you can't, again, if you're a fan, you can ignore it. If you are running an NBA team, unless you know that if you, you know, unless you're going to get fired in 2 years anyway and you don't care, you have to at least pay some attention to that. But there's plenty of teams that run like that, right? There are plenty of teams that don't think 4 years in advance because they're like, I'm on the brink of getting fired, so I'm going to do whatever I have to do this offseason and damn the torpedoes.
Right.
But well-run franchises have to think that way.
Right. Well, I mean, I think, you know, Daryl Morey in Houston, I think you can see kind of like the evolution of that long-term planning earlier on. And like this year was just like, damn the torpedoes, let's go. We're doing everything we can to do it now. And I don't think they worried about a lot of that stuff. I think that's an example of what you're talking about. Whereas
Sometimes ownership tells you this is what we're going to do. And then you have to do the best you can with it. And largely that seems like what happened with the Rockets, right? They pushed and they pushed and they pushed. They never really rebuilt from the T-Mac and Yao era. They built around Harden. They push and push and push. They get CP3 in. The two of them just don't like each other.
Right.
End up being forced into a corner of like, okay, well, what's left? Can we break the whole thing up and rebuild? Your owner says, no, you cannot pay the luxury tax, but also we can't rebuild. And you're trapped, right? So you sometimes just, things run their course and they break down or you have ownership that tells you something. That doesn't mean you didn't plan in the first place. It's just sometimes your plans do reach a logical conclusion and you just kind of have to say, okay, well, somebody else's turn now and they're going to blow that team up and do whatever they have to do. I would like for the Celtics to be blowing up their team, their Jason Tatum center team, by trading him to the Nets for multiple first round draft picks, you know, 13 years from now.
Right.
Wonderful. We can repeat the cycle. I don't want that to be happening when he's 26 years old.
Right. Right. That would not be the ideal situation. So as I've said, the conversation was split into two pieces. This was part one. Part two tomorrow is going to focus a lot more on Gordon Hayward and a lot more on the team building aspect, why the Celtics might be structuring things the way they want, things that the Celtics can do if Hayward opts in, potential trades, things like that. So that's going to be tomorrow's show. If you're new, if you're just listening, if you're one of Ryan's followers on Twitter and you're just coming over for the first time, welcome. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. You'll get more of Ryan tomorrow, and then I hope you stick around for more podcasts. For now, through the off season, it's going to be 5 days a week. There'll be a couple of weeks there when things slow down that will drop to three, but once things are going back up, this is a daily podcast. Throughout the season, it is a daily podcast. So make sure that you subscribe. You regular listeners, I love you. Thank you for the ratings. Thank you for the 5-star ratings, the good written reviews. You've made this podcast the number one Boston Celtics podcast in the world. It's because you did all that stuff. And you're sharing the podcast. That's important. When people ask you which Celtics podcast you should be listening to, it is the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network.